Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Soon, it will be law, fiduciary responsibility. A fiduciary is legally and ethically obligated to act in the best interest of their client. Being a registered investment advisor firm, KPP Financial has carried out this responsibility for its clients for many years. Do you have questions about fiduciary responsibility? Send a note. Click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com. End of commercial. Now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It is April 22nd, 2016. I appreciate you being with me. And as usual, I start off with our motto, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. We're dedicated to help you make you a better investor and make better decisions about your money. It's that simple. And we have an hour to do that. So I hope you can feel welcome, make a call, discuss it. This really is, you drive the show, you drive the topic. Love to hear from you. Now, earlier this week, we had a question about hedging. Now, during periods like we're in, where the market has had a nice run up, and it looks like it's, you know, maybe getting a little heady, well, maybe there's a reason to be cautious. And so how do you, what kind of strategy should you deploy? Should you just ignore it? Now, a lot of people, you should just ignore it. Just keep stay invested and run with the ups and downs of the market. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. But if you want to hedge, there's different ways to protect your portfolio from your stocks from falling. Most time it is used to mitigate the fall, not stop it altogether. But the fall in value of your portfolio is what we're talking about. Now, you can use various methods. A perfect hedge is if you buy 100 shares of a particular stock and you sell short those 100 shares of the same stock. It means it would go up. If it goes up, and it, no matter where it goes, up or down, you won't make money and you won't lose money. That's a perfect hedge. But you don't have to do that. That's just a perfect hedge that you could use. And why would you use it? There are people who ask me, well, why would anybody do that? Well, maybe you still like the stock, but you know it's gotten ahead of itself in price, and you don't want to sell it because then you'll trigger a capital gains event. So you wanted to sell it short for a while, and if it goes down, great. And you still don't lose any money, and then you can take your hedge off when it's gone down far enough to be undervalued again. So that's one way you can hedge. There are many kinds of hedges. You can hedge in the opposite direction a portion of the whole market while you still hold on to your individual stocks. Because if the whole market goes down, your stocks will probably go down too. But the hope is maybe the market will go down faster than the holdings that you have because you have really good holdings. See, so there's that kind of hedge. So there's just many kinds of ways to do it. The biggest danger is not understanding the hedge that you're putting on. So don't get too exotic out there because most people don't know how to hedge. And, you know, it's something that we do. We're right now hedging part of our portfolio. But that's what professionals do. You know, in certain times of the market, it's just a smart thing to do. But again, there's many ways to do it. But you got to understand how you do it. It can get very complicated. Let's talk about your money topics. I mentioned shorting. Do you have questions about shorting? And as I said, InvestTalk is a question and answer program. So we're here to try to help you with anything you might need help with. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's take on a question right now.
Hi, this is Jack from Minneapolis. I have a question about umbrella insurance. Maybe Steve can help us with this. I think the listener will benefit from learning about it too. Umbrella insurance, do we need it? What does it really do? Thank you so much. You have a great show. Thank you.
Umbrella insurance. Okay. Think of an umbrella. Underneath the umbrella is your policies. You have your auto policy and your homeowner's policy. You know, you might have policies on rental properties that you have. And there are limits for liability or fire damage could be a lower limit. Let's say liability. Just take, for instance, liability. Let's say you're insuring yourself and your auto and your home against liability from someone getting hurt on your property, or you accidentally run them over or hit them in your car and hurt somebody, and your limits on those two policies are $100,000. Well, that's a little low, especially if you have assets that they can come after. So what you can do is, instead of raising the limits of that policy, the underlying policy, the auto policy or the homeowner's policy, instead of raising the limits to $1 million, you can buy an umbrella that sits on top of all these policies, an umbrella insurance policy. It sits on top of all of them, and you can buy $1 million worth of coverage in excess of your underlying policy. So the umbrella doesn't take an effect unless someone sues you and then exceeds the limit liability of their underlying policy. The damages exceed that limit. Then your umbrella policy would cover you. Why would you do it that way than raising just the underlying policy to $1 million? Because it's a lot cheaper. The premiums are cheaper. I do it, so that's why I know it. You know, I know that that's how it works. And I used to be in the insurance business, so I know how that works. So the umbrella sits on top of other policies. It works best if all the policies are under one insurance company, because then the insurance company's getting all the premium, and they like umbrellas. They like them a lot because there's a lot less risk in the umbrella policies. So they can take more chances with that premium. Chances meaning investing it. And you know that most insurance companies reinsure themselves. You know, they don't, if you have a $1 million policy with an insurance company and they have to pay out $1 million for whatever reason, you realize that they don't really pay out the $1 million. Almost all insurance companies are reinsured, meaning they go out and sell some of the risk that they've taken to other insurance companies. They spread the risk around. So they might pay, they might write a check for $1 million, and then they might get half that money back from 10 different insurance companies. And then there's different kinds of excess and reinsurance for the insurance companies to use, but we won't get into that stuff. Can an all ETF portfolio deliver for you? ETFs, I like ETFs, I like them a lot. And that's gonna be our main talking point today. ETFs, an ETF portfolio. Maybe that's all you need. Also, I want to talk about commodities. What is driving the prices of commodities up? What's driving it? Are the bulls in charge of this current rally that we're in? Are they really in charge of it? Does it feel like it? I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about a particular company today, Schlumberger. Do you know who Schlumberger is? Well, you don't have to know. But the reason why I want to talk about it is they are one of the largest, or if not the largest, provider of management and information solutions for the petroleum industry. They're a $100 billion company. The CEO made some comments. Made them a few weeks ago, and then restated them today when they came out with their earnings. And I'm not talking about the company, even though we own the company. I own the company in our managed account, some of our stock managed accounts. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about, you know, what the CEO sees in the marketplace in the oil industry. I think that's going to be interesting. The market was mixed today. The Dow was up 21 points. It would have been up a lot higher, but you had a huge hit on a couple of stuff. Remember we talked about last night, who reported earnings? Microsoft and Google. They really held it back. Then the NASDAQ was down 40 points. 40. Because, why? You know, Microsoft and Google are part of the NASDAQ. Also, you know, part of the reason why the Dow was hit so hard. But the S&P 500, it was up 0.1 point. Yeah, that's better than being down. It was down during the day. Better than being down. That's all I can tell you. You know, so the market this week, we had earnings out, and then earnings have been pretty much as expected, meaning they've been pretty bad. And they beat a number of expectations by the experts because they really ratcheted them down before the earnings season started. But they pretty much have come in expected. And this will be the third quarter, as I said before, third quarter in a row where earnings have gone down for corporations. Earnings have gone down three times in a row, three quarters in a row. Sales, four quarters in a row. We'll see. We'll know for sure once we, you know, this is what it looks like it's going to come out on this first quarter of 2016. That's what it looks like. We just don't know for sure until the quarter's over, until the earnings season's over, and we'll know. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. I invite you to join our Invest Talk Insiders. It's a way to have access to all sorts of good information, commentary, lists, and recorded webinars. There's an info sheet on managing a bond portfolio. It explains in plain English how to ladder a bond portfolio. Sign up for free on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab.
Hi, this is Rob from San Jose, and I'm interested in establishing a position in regional banks. Specifically, I've been eyeing ETF KRU. And I was wondering what you guys thought about that sector, as well as what a good entry point might be. Thank you very much.
Okay, KRU is a ProShares Ultra S&P Regional Bank ETF, exchange-traded fund corresponding to twice the daily performance of the KBW Regional Bank Index. So it's tracking the index, and then it's trying to leverage 200% of that index. So it's a leveraged fund. And, you know, I don't really care for leveraged funds. I think they're risky. And they have trouble doing what they say they're doing, that they'll do. Now, regional banks in themselves, that's not a bad place to be. Banks do well during an economic expansion period. The banks are under pressure right now, especially the big banks, the too big to fail kind of banks, because there's so many regulations on them that it's getting difficult for them to make the money they used to make because they can't take the risks that they used to take. And you could argue whether that's good or bad, but the regional banks don't have that same problem that the big majors do. So it might be a better area, if you wanted to get into banks, be a better area to get into is the regional banks. Now, what I would do is I would look at what's inside the index, the regional bank index that it's following, the KBW regional bank index, and take a look at the top, you know, 5 or 10 holdings in there and find out, you know, how solid those banks are. That's really what you're investing in a banking and ETF. So I would take a look at all the. I'd look at all the holdings, but you know, at least the top and the top holdings in those indexes. But again, I don't really care for leveraged funds. They're fine for trading, but not for investing. You can use it for a trade, but not investing. KRU, KRU is the symbol. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So we've had earnings come out this week. We've had some economic reports. The ones that were, you know, probably the most important were you had the LEI, leading economic indicators, which was up 0.2%. Not a lot, but it was better than the 0.1% shrinkage last month, which wasn't a lot either. The housing reports, we had existing home sales, and that was pretty strong. That has been pretty strong. But the new home sales and building permits, and the thing I look at really clearly is building permits. They were down 100,000 for both of them. Still over a million, but down 100,000 month over month. So that was just a little bit concerned, but nothing major. There wasn't a lot of economic numbers out this week except for earnings. And we talked about those. This is Invest Talk, a place to talk about your money. I'd love to hear about your portfolio. What's your mix of assets? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Steve or Justin?
I'm wondering what out there is going to work better over the next 20 years than buy and hold.
You're the best person to ask it at 888-99-CHART. Continue with this Friday, April 22nd, Invest Talk.
Check in now with your questions. 888-99-CHART. The line is always open. InvestTalk is produced live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Call and join in the conversation. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Love to hear from you. Three ways to build an all ETF portfolio for a secure retirement. That's the article I'll be referring to. If you want to look it up, it's on our webpage on the front page. You'll see it. But ETFs, they become more and more popular. I like them, exchange-traded funds. They trade like stocks, and they usually track an index or sector. And there's all kinds of them now. There's short ETFs, long ETFs, short meaning selling the markets short. You know, and they track every sliver out there. Now, for people who don't want to build their own portfolio of stocks, which can be very time consuming and take a lot of work and take a lot of data that you may not have to do the proper research, and maybe you don't have the skills to do the proper research, ETFs can help you keep it simple. So you can buy an ETF, the S&P 500. So now you own 500 stocks if you bought that ETF. Or you can buy almost any index, NASDAQ, the Russell 2000. Any index that's out there, I've seen almost there's an ETF for it. You can buy country-specific ETFs. Some countries have more than one. So if you think Brazil is going to take off, well, there's two ETFs in Brazil. I know there's a couple in India too. So, you know, if you really, I would use those because it's just too hard to do the research for the various companies in those countries because they're not clear or we don't have enough data or the data is not good enough. So there's a way you can just keep it simple. You can buy just a plain old vanilla ETFs. If you want diversification, you can buy an S&P 500 ETF for 80% of your portfolio and 20% of a bond ETF. So if you want to make a kind of a balance, you can do that. Or if you want to get a little bit more, you know, a little bit more specific, you can buy, you know, 10, 15 different ETFs targeting various sectors that you think are going to work going forward. Maybe you really like oil and you want to be in the oil sector, or maybe you really like regional banks. I've never looked for a regional bank ETF, but I'll bet you there's one out there. So you can build your own portfolio any way you want to. Doing that. Okay, and there's also another way you can build an ETF portfolio. They have robo-advisors now. Now, these are, of course, direct competitors of mine, but I kind of like them. In one sense, if you want to just be an investor and let a computer do the investing for you, you can use a robo-advisor who will buy a bunch of ETFs and rebalance it every so often, and you kind of take a look at what the robo-advisor does. If you're going to be aggressive or non-aggressive. You know, they don't really pay much attention to you as an individual other than they automatically rebalancing the ETFs. So you might want to consider that. There's ways you can do it with ETFs. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Time to give me a call. What do you want to talk about? Anything financial we can talk about. Again, 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number. Kenny called from San Diego.
Love your show and always learn tons. And I was looking at Raytheon and looking at a buy point or looking for a buy point. I don't own it, but would like to, and where's a buy point to get into Raytheon and be interested in what your take is on the fundamentals and the chart. So thanks a lot, and we'll listen on the internet. Bye.
Raytheon Corporation is, the symbol is RTN, RTN, manufactures guidance systems, lasers, missile systems, integrated defense platforms, and command control systems. It's a $37-38 billion company. So it's not small. It's a big, big company. Their growth rate is slow. 3-6% in the last year, quarter over quarter. That's about the average growth rate. Their earnings are going to be up 11% this year and then 13% next year. So that's $7.94 next year. It's a $120 stock. Okay, so so therefore it's about a 16-17 PE look going forward. 16-17 PE going forward. Pays a 2.3% dividend. He wanted an entry point. Well, it's not here. I can tell you that. Because in December, now let me go back a little further. Maybe I need to go back a little further. How about a year? Go back the whole year. Oh, yeah. Same thing. Okay, in December, it topped. Last year, it was up last year, which is much better than the market. I mean, it ran from 107 to about 123 last year. So that was much better than the market. But since December, it topped, and it fell in January, then topped again in February, then fell again in the same month, and now it's right near again at the top, but it's going sideways, and I wouldn't buy it until it either breaks down or pulls back, because while it's going sideways the last 2 weeks, it's making its mind up whether it should break through. You don't buy it here. Wait till it breaks through 100, maybe it gets to 128 or so, or pulls back. You know, wait. You're listening to Invest Talk. Do you have a question about annuities, reverse mortgages? Those are not our two financial products you can see, as you see advertised a lot. Let's talk about them. 888-99-CHART. We'll go to Dave in Boston, then you.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Remember, no matter where you live in the United States, you can have your retirement portfolio reviewed by a registered investment advisor at no cost. Steve does a few of these each month on Skype or telephone. To schedule your time with Steve, just click on the InvestTalk tab on investtalk.com and then Portfolio Review.
We're going to go talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art? You want to talk about real estate?
Yes. I just had a question on the demographics of the, I guess, the millennials, because I was reading an article about that, and they were saying that we have so many millennials that within the next 10 years or so, it'll affect the property in the Silicon Valley area where I'm located. You have any thoughts on that?
Well, I know the millennials have been postponing buying properties for some time and have been postponing getting married and having children. And there's various theories of that. Some of them is that they're waiting to pay off their student loans, or they just don't feel I really need to hurry up and get into a house. But there is a load of millennials that are not in the property market yet. But I've also seen some evidence they're starting to come into the property market. Up in the valley where you are, the Silicon Valley, Art, I have a hard time believing that real estate values will go down.
Thinking more in terms of once they're past their buying age, I guess, after they've had the family, within probably between 35 and 40-ish,
yes.
I guess.
Yes.
If they haven't bought a place by then more than likely they're probably going to be a renter for a while, I would think.
They might be, but I do think we know for a fact that they postponed doing things of my generation, and I'm 63. My generation, concept was to start a family and buy properties as soon as you can afford it. But that's not how millennials think. Yeah, they don't think that way. So, but I do think in Silicon Valley, I mean, the growth is just going to continue. It's hard for me to believe that it's not. It's going to just continue to be pressure on properties. And of course, there's going to be downstrokes. But overall, I still think, until the job market up there collapses, which I don't see it happening anytime soon, yeah, it's going to be pressure on the upside for properties. Appreciate the call, Art. Thank you. Dave in Boston, thank you for holding on, Dave. I appreciate that.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
I've always had trouble valuing REITs properly. I'm looking at NHI. It looks like it can afford what it's paying out, and the chart looks good, but I'm just not sure. If you could help me out, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, they do. They're going to make $5.14 next year. It's a $66 stock, and they're paying 5%, a little bit more than 5%. So that's easy. They can pay their dividend. They can. They have plenty of money. Remember, REITs, to be a REIT, you have to pay 90% out of your income in the form of a dividend to the shareholders, and you get to avoid corporate income tax completely. And it looks like they can do it. The fundamentals of NHI, National Health Investor, everybody, it's a REIT that acquires and develops and leases healthcare properties, primarily in the long-term care industry in 31 states. It's a $2.5 billion company, so it's decent size. Yeah, not huge, but pretty decent size. REITs are a bit harder to evaluate simply because, they don't have the same, because of their REIT and they're paying out those dividends, they don't reinvest in themselves like a normal company would do with their profits. They, generally speaking, borrow money. So what you're looking at when you're looking at a REIT is look how much money they borrowed. And then try to make a determination is how often, when do they have to refinance it? Or do they borrow more than they can handle in the future? Is that going to cost more money, therefore reduce my earnings and then, of course, reduce my dividend? So you kind of want to look at their debt. They're going to have debt, Dave, but you want to make sure the debt's not killing them. And National Health Investor, their debt's not that bad. So this one looks pretty good. So you buy it on a pullback. When it pulls back, you buy it.
Okay? Okay, thank you.
Thanks. I appreciate the call, Dave. Yeah, REITs are a little bit different animals as far as analyzing them. You want a good return on equity, and this one's 14%, which is pretty good. But you got to watch the debt. That's, I think, the key for a REIT. How much debt are they taking on? Because that's how they grow. Don't be afraid that they have debt. But be wary of how much they have. And then you're going to ask me, well, how much should they have? Well, I can't answer that. It depends on what kind of REIT it is and what they do. I wish it was simple. It's just not. Thanks for the call, Dave. That was a really good call. Okay, how about commodities? Have you seen the rally? I'm sure you have. It's obvious in the rally in oil. But there's a rally in silver, cocoa, soybeans, I mean, very strong. And these are commodities. And every commodity has its own supply and demand characteristics. But we've had a pretty broad-based rally in commodities recently where we haven't had the same expansion in the economy that you would think causes this rally. Because the World Bank is ratcheting down world growth. The IMF, International Monetary Fund, ratcheting down world growth. Then why is there pressure on the commodities on the upside? Now, of course, again, they have their own supply demand characteristics, that will apply here, and there's also weather issues that could apply here. But it seems like investors and traders in these commodities are ignoring all the bad news. Now, that might mean that they're a lot smarter than we are, and they see that we're near a turning point for supply and demand. In other words, demand's going to turn up, so they want to try to get ahead of it. And then again, they could be absolutely wrong, too. So it's difficult, but I at this point, I'm not. You won't hear me now talk about go out and buy big oil. Not now, because we've had a nice move and oil prices are pretty high. And I think that maybe it's time just to be patient, because we probably might have a pullback. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit here in oil, in particular, when we talk. It's one of my talking points. So. About Schlumberger. If you don't know who that is, well, I'll share that with you. 888-99-CHART is how to get through this, to get to me this hour anytime you want, 24 hours a day, but I'm live right now this hour, 888-99-CHART. So let's talk about proper diversification. What is that? What is proper diversification? And I'll tell you what, there's no one definition of it. But we have an info sheet on it at investtalk.com. You can be an insider just by giving us your email, sign in, and you can see what we're talking about when we talk about diversification. It's free. It's free. Anybody can sign up. Just go to investtalk.com.
Steve has some new check updates listed on investtalk.com. He'll be in San Ramon May 11th and San Jose May 25th. To schedule your time on those dates, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
My name is John. I'm from Mission Viejo, and I listen to your show on the podcast, and I enjoy listening to you every day. And what I would like to know, I'm a 55-year-old man, and I rolled over my IRA into a Scott trade. I'm wondering what percentages should I put in, like, I'm thinking about putting in ETFs and maybe mutuals. What percentage of each stock and what position should I put them in? And also, you always mention on stocks that don't put more than 3% in each position. But for a mutual or an ETF, what percentage of each one would you put in? Thank you, and hopefully I'll hear you on the radio. Bye.
Well, in our mutual fund program, we buy between 8 and 12% on average, and that tells you how many funds we have if we're fully invested. So, you know, because they are already diversified, you can buy 25, 50%. And if you're going to buy the S&P 500 ETF, you can buy 100% of your portfolio because it spreads it out over 100 to 500 different stocks. So, but if you're going to start doing sector funds and ETFs, I would say 8 to 12% each, and you have, you know, 10, 12 funds, ETFs, in different parts of the market, depending on how diversified you want and whether you feel that there's a certain area that's going to do better than others. And you don't have to, the same rule doesn't apply in stocks. Stocks, I like to buy 3% of any one stock, no more than 15 to 20% of any one sector. And sometimes I violate that second rule. And sometimes I buy up to 5% of stock, but it's pretty rare, pretty rare. So that's because you need better diversification. Now you're focused on one stock, where an ETF is a broad base of stocks in a sector or a whole index. So it's just different when you buy ETFs and mutual funds. 888-99-CHART is how you get through. We'd love to talk to you. It's time for InvestTalk 101 right now. So let's try a couple of true-false quiz questions. True or false? The best way to evaluate a mutual fund is to track its performance over the previous year. That would be false. Never, ever, ever buy last year's winner in a mutual fund. In other words, last year's mutual fund was up 35%, and it's all in the news. Everybody's happy. They're on all the top of the list. You say, well, Mom, let me buy that one. It did so well. Very often, the fund that did really good last year usually does poorly the next year because it took the chances last year to get to the top, okay? And that means it took very specific risks that may work in one year but not another. Now, of course, it could work in another year, but the odds are against you. I'm about another one, true or false? Diversifying within the market eliminates risk. Diversifying within the stock market eliminates risk. That's false too. You never can eliminate risk. You can only reduce it. And diversifying reduces risk. You can diversify away from the stock market. You can diversify within the stock market. Okay, if you do that, that will reduce risk, but it'll still be pretty high risk. Then you can diversify away from stocks, have some stocks and some bonds. That reduces more the risk further. It reduces than just being in the stock market. You can reduce risk by being in equities or ETFs that move differently than the stock market. Therefore, you're now diversifying away from the stocks and bonds. So that means you're diversifying even more. So it's, you know, you can never eliminate risk. Never, ever, ever, ever. It's just different kinds of risk and different levels of risk. If you have a question about either one of these topics, the two questions I ask you about diversifying evaluating mutual funds, give me a call. We'll talk about it. If you have a question, check it out, 888-99-CHART, or you can send me a note by clicking on Contact Steve at InvestTalk.com. Let's talk to William in Santa Clara. How you doing, William?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing great.
Thanks for calling.
I have a question in regards to Microsoft MSFT, and during yesterday's program, you briefly touched on that earning reports came out yesterday after hours, and they were bad, but people might consider buying it because it dropped and so it made it a little bit more attractive.
Right.
So I'm looking at Microsoft. I'm just wondering if this is a point where we might want to pick it up.
Actually, it got really close to the 200-day moving average and a strong support at the bottom of the range today, but then it bounced off. So it did kind of do, mind you, everybody, it fell 7% today. But it was closer to 10% sometime during the day. And we knew it was going to be bad as William said. We talked about it yesterday on the show. That after hours, it's not going to be pleasant. But not very common, and this happened to Microsoft, very common, you know, it bounces, goes down to a level that looks like it's attractive, and it starts attracting back in buyers. And yes, I think, William, that this was pretty close. This might be the area. $50 was ideal. And it got close, but never really got to $50. The low of the day was $50.77. And it closed today at $51.78, so a dollar off of that. But, if you're looking to get into Microsoft, I looked at the earnings reports and what was the cause and all those things. And I think they can overcome this. I do. So, you know, that one bad quarter. Now, you might want to wait for another couple of days, William, to see if it really did. It is the bottom of this, you know. Or you can also wait several months to see if the whole market pulls back and pulls Microsoft down with it and buy it then. Either way would work.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. Dan Los Altos, you want to talk about Google? I don't have much time. I may have to.
We got a good connection. Can you hear me all right?
I hear you great.
Oh, great. Just had a quick question related, I guess, Google, or Alphabet rather, GOOGL, whether this might be a good time to pick up some shares and where you would put a stop, or would you wait for it to drop even further?
I wish I would have been happier with Google dropping a little further. But Google has some pretty strong, the numbers were really strong. I don't think they were that weak. So I think if you were looking for an opportunity, this might be it. And just like I said on Microsoft, if we get a market pullback, you might get a better price. But maybe buy half a position. Now,
okay.
Buy more later. Thank you. I appreciate it, Dan.
On the next Invest Talk, investors should be wary of unfamiliar terms. Don't be bamboozled by the jargon. 5 terms everyone should know about investing. That's our main talking point on the next Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now with your question.
So are the bulls in charge of this market? Is that what we're saying? They push the market, or bounce the market off of lows. That, remember, the market really took it on the chin in January. And the reason why it took it on the chin in January is because the Federal Reserve raised the rates for the first time in years in December. Now, did you notice as soon as the Feds in January, started late January, early February, started talking about, well, maybe we're not going to be raising the rates anytime soon. We're going to slow it down. Remember, they were going to raise it 4 times this year. That was what all the talk was about. Now, as soon as they start waffling like that, The market likes it, ran up. And it's still kind of running up. So are the bulls in charge, though? When I say in charge, that means are they driving the market, you know, or is it something else that driving the market? And there's some indications that maybe they're running out of steam. For instance, the sentiment, investor sentiment, is at the highest it's been since 2015. And if you remember right, in 2015, it peaked in April. And you probably don't remember because let me just tell you. It did. It peaked in April. And what happened in May and June? And we are above that peak now. And it's April again. And so the market kind of topped in May. Do you remember? It topped in May. I think it was May 21st or May 22nd. The market hit a top. And from that day on, it started to weaken for the rest of the year. Okay? And we had a nice 10% correction in the summer, then another 10% correction. I mean, it was painful. It wasn't a good year. So are the bulls in charge? And is the market tied? The move of this market seems to be tied to the move of oil. And oil seems to be tied to the price of the dollar. If you look at the dollar, the U.S. dollar, it has fallen for much of this year so far. So if those things are true, then how much further do we have the dollar to follow? Because it's starting to raise again, but oil's still going up. And the market's going up despite world GDP being ratcheted down. Despite earnings and sales going down for 3 and 4 quarters in a row, the market's just kind of ignoring that. So is it tied to the dollar and oil? And I'm really, you know, you've heard me. I'm telling people to be a little bit cautious right now. And I'm telling you, I think you need to be a little bit cautious. Let's talk to Tim in Fremont. How you doing, Tim?
Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good.
I like to make an entry on a stock, BX, be like boy, X, X-ray. Please let me know your thoughts.
Okay, that's Blackstone Group. Blackstone Group. Let's get that up here on the chart and take a look at that. Come on. Okay, you know, Blackstone provides global alternative asset management and financial advisory services. And Blackstone is a very good company, has been a very good company for a number of years, but the sales have been falling sharply the last year. I mean, 50% to 60, 70% per quarter. Earnings are still good. But sales have been falling, and, you know, that's kind of disappointing. 7.5% dividend yield. Well, that means if they're going to make $3.28 next year, and they pay 7.5% of that, that's what, $2.50 or so? All right, I'm sorry, 7.5% of the stock price, which is 28, and that is, you know, $1.80, $2. So they can afford the dividend. That's not even an issue. So, but because of the sale, it's going to make $3.20. That means the PE is going to be about 8. It looks like a pretty decent company, a different decent price. And this looks like a good place to start picking it up if you want to buy it. Tim, appreciate the call. Thank you. That's Blackstone, everybody. BX. BX. Might want to wait to see what the summer gives you, maybe a pullback. Our time is up. I have some new dates for personal retirement reviews. These are one-hour informal meetings. I can give you my opinion on your accounts and answer your questions about our management services. I'll be in San Ramon on May 11th and San Jose on May 25th. To schedule your time on those dates, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, and for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today, and let's do it again next week.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.